This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And a good Saturday morning, one and all. Frank Proctor here, sous chef of the garden, in studio at the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village. And on the phone line from her home in Prince Edward County, there's Charlie Dobbin. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Frankie. How are you?
I'm doing good. Well, I must admit, that trip from Stouffville down the 404, a little bit of a white knuckler from time to time this morning. Oh, well, it's particularly bad when they've got barricades or doing a whole bunch of work on lanes in the middle of the 404. And sometimes when those barricades are on the left, it feels like you're going to be running into them. Oh, brother. So anyway, other than that, everything's fine. How about you?
Did you get some snow?
Oh, yeah. We got, I would say, about 2 inches, maybe a little bit more than that overnight.
Nice, because I've been absolutely Kelly green here, so green.
Isn't that?
So, yeah, it's just been so mild here. And so, yeah, green lawns, everything's just been super green. And then, thankfully, yes, I love it. It snowed last night pretty much all night. We had a little rain mixed in there. So we've got a mishmash of shiny crystalline trees and white, really nice blanket of white on everything. So,
and
yes.
You were mentioning in a little email you sent to me that you're going to be able to use the skis that you got last year, the cross-country skis, right?
I hope so. I don't know. I don't know if it's quite enough snow, but yes, that's kind of the irony. Elliot and I got each other cross-country skis for Christmas last Christmas, and they're still in their original packaging. We just haven't had enough snow to be able to get out onto the land, but hopefully we will.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about what folks should be thinking of at this point in time with gardening in mind. You've got a few thoughts on Christmas trees.
Well, just before we go there, I have a confession to make, and I think I should just, you know, unload this right now.
Okay.
I started reading a book, and it was such a good book that I pretty much stayed up all night reading a book. And so if I'm a little slow today, it's because I didn't get enough sleep. Just wanted to let you know.
Well, what's the name of the book? I mean, folks might be intrigued to know.
You know what? It's a book that you would like, because you and I were reading the series, and it's the author is Ken Follett.
Oh, gosh, yes. Good writer.
Yeah, so remember, he's written, and when he writes a book, it's like a 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000-page book. So his newest book is called The Evening and the Morning.
It's
only 3,300 pages long. And I just finished it at about 6 o'clock. Well, 5:30 this morning.
I'm just writing that down so I can remember it. I love his work. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a prequel. Remember we read, you know, the Pillars of the Earth.
And, yeah, right. The Iger Sanction, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think Fall of Giants.
Oh,
is one of them.
Tons of books.
Kind of a trilogy there. He's written so many books. This guy has 160 million books in print. But so this is kind of a prequel. This takes place around the year 1000. So it was very good, though. I love historical fiction, right? So that's what it was.
So do I. Okay.
Yeah.
You veered away from your Christmas tree item there.
Yes, I did. I've been thinking about it. I haven't taken my tree down yet, but I imagine many people have or are in the process. Maybe today it's a crystal blue sky. It's a good day to take a tree down.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the deal. Let's not just put them at the end of the driveway if we can avoid it, because some municipalities don't actually dispose of the trees anywhere other than the landfill. So why have it rot in a landfill? Why not just keep it on your property and let it add organic matter back onto your property? You know, we talked about this, and I think actually a couple of years ago, your grandchildren were coming up right around now, and we were talking about taking the tree outside, jamming it into a snowdrift somewhere, and then getting the kids to make some kind of funky bird-friendly ornaments out of pine cones rolled in peanut butter. and then hanging them in the tree, and then, of course, providing some food for the birds, some shelter for the birds, and then allowing that tree to just do its thing, allow it to just decompose slowly. It'll take a few years, but allow it to just add good nutrients back into the soil.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, let me connect. We're going to be reading an email shortly from Marcia Lomas, who has a question. But one tip she passed along for those still wanting to keep their Christmas tree up. She says the best floral preservative I've ever used is 7-Up, not the diet type. It keeps cut flowers fresh for a week and more, depending on the variety. In addition, you don't need to keep changing the water so often as it stays clear. And she said, I presume this also work quite well for Christmas trees. Now, one could use ginger oil. She says she's tried it with equally good results, or another sugar-based cola. I would suggest maybe, Charlie, that she add a little whiskey to that. The tree would come up half cut. I'm sorry. Yeah, I had to do that. Okay, we have to come along to our first break here. But you know what I haven't given is the phone numbers. Yeah, I know. Frankie's falling down on the job here. Okay, yeah. Let's see. In Toronto, my friends, call 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, you can reach Charlie Dobbin at 1-866-740-4740. That's our long distance line, which of course is free. All righty. Good enough. We have to take this a little break now, give time to our sponsors, and then come back at you with all sorts of good stuff with Charlie Dobbin on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And rather a gloomy start to this Saturday morning, Charlie, but hey, let's brighten things up by welcoming in Carmen from Durham, who's on the line right now. Good morning, Carmen. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Yeah, go ahead.
Morning.
Morning, Charlie. Morning.
What's going on at your place, Carmen?
Oh, nothing. It'll be in the morning. Same thing. Same joke. Same
Sounds
story,
like you
everything.
Stayed up all night reading a book, too, Carmen.
Yeah, I feel that way.
Okay, Mr. Sparkle, what do you got for us? What question do you have for Charlie?
The avocado seed I got. I want to know how to plant it and how to grow it.
Sorry, what kind of seed was that?
Avocado.
Avocado.
Oh, avocado.
Right, okay.
Good idea. Yeah, we've had a few calls on this one in the last few months. It's a wonderful way to get into the garden spirit for, you know, deep, dark nights and days of winter. So an avocado, simplest way that I've ever grown an avocado, you just get a glass of water, you know, small, you know, orange juice-sized, 4-ounce, 6-ounce-sized glass, and some toothpicks, 3 toothpicks. You'll look at the seed. Of course, you've eaten the avocado, so the seed is all washed off and cleaned up. It's got a flat bottom and a pointy top, so you're going to orient it that way. And what you're going to do is you're going to just suspend that seed in the water so that the bottom, flat bottom of the seed will just be kissing or just touching the water below. And you're going to use toothpicks stuck into the seed, and 3 usually works fine. And it just basically, the toothpicks hold the seed up on the edge of the glass, and you just make sure you've always got some water touching the seed, and it'll take a couple of weeks, but before you know it, the seed will crack open, and a stem will grow at the top, and roots will grow at the bottom, and once that happens, then you're in a good position to get it planted up in some soil.
Isn't that neat? I think it was the Toronto Star a couple of days ago. They had a whole section on avocado and how it's huge in the health industry right now. People, it's really good for you.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny because avocados got really trendy in the last 5 or 6 years. So that the growers, I mean, they're growing a tree, right? So they're not like an instant crop like tomatoes or something. So, avocados have become a very big, very large horticultural product grown now all over the place, wherever it's warm enough.
Used in salads and all that sort of thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's great, Carmen. Hope that
Thanks
helped.
Thanks for calling, yeah.
All righty, yeah. We go to Markham next and say hi to John, who's waiting patiently there. Hi, John. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Happy New Year, both of you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. You
yeah,
too.
Let me be the first one. I feel honored.
Oh, okay.
Happy growing this year. I heard so much. I love hydrangeas. Uh-huh. And I didn't much luck last year because I bought some of it kind of a shady area, maybe. That doesn't need about 6 hours of sun. Is that correct?
It depends on the kind of hydrangea. Are you talking about the ones with the round flowers?
The tiny, the low, like tapered flowers.
Yeah, the conical flowers, like sort of pointy on the top.
Yeah, the point, they go to a point.
Yeah, those
they're called tiny, right. I believe.
And they do need 6 hours of direct sunlight every day in order to flower.
I let them suffer last year. I'm going to try to do better this year. I'm going to relocate them in the spring.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah.
Now, one question regarding the hydrangeas. I heard about coffee grind. Is that good for hydrangea a little bit? Like when you plant them?
Coffee grounds are actually good for any of your plants.
Is it?
Yeah. Remember, nothing in excess. So if you have a pot of coffee every day and you have a quantity of grounds every day, I wouldn't just keep putting them in the same spot, but you can definitely sprinkle them in the garden. Into my composters where I typically put my coffee grounds along with all the other things, banana peels and eggshells and all that stuff. But, coffee grounds can be good. They will slightly acidify the soil, so that's probably why you've heard of them for hydrangeas.
Yeah.
Remember the hydrangeas you're talking about with the more pointy flowers are very different from the hydrangeas with the very round flowers. The ones with the round flowers very much love a pH lower than neutral. And, of course, that's where we get in some of our purple colors and our blue colors in the flowers.
Yeah. The only thing, Tony, I found that they get so big. And these are the other ones, the tiny, are more dwarf. They don't get as big.
Right.
And the colors are kind of fall colors in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they're gorgeous. The colors, flowers change color.
Yeah.
They're very.
So don't go to McDonald's and store up on coffee grinding.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, I don't know if they still do it, but Starbucks used to package up their coffee grinds just in a basket near the front door of their stores, free for the taking, to take home for the garden.
Maybe once a week, put a little bit on?
Yes, you can. Once a week at the most, and depending on the life in your soil, right? If you've got a very good soil with worms and all kinds of microorganisms, then they'll just chew up those coffee grounds very, very quickly.
That's good.
Don't hesitate to
also do some fertilizing. I'll maybe talk to you again in the spring, but fertilize when and what kind of to get. I want to have a good year with the hydrangeas this year.
Yeah, good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you for calling.
Hey, John, thank you.
Hesitate to call back.
Have a happy new year, and thank you for tuning our way here on Zoomer Radio, AM 740 and 96.7 FM in downtown Toronto. I'm going to take a little break and then come back. I've got that question from Marcia Lomas that we've been hanging on to for a couple of weeks. We'll get to that in just a couple of moments. A reminder, phone lines are open in Toronto. Call 416-360-0740. Anywhere in the province, toll free to reach Charlie Dobbin at 1-866-740-4740. Charlie and I will return in moments here on Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, Charlie, this is our first show in the brand new year of 2021.
Good point. I meant to say that to you. Happy New Year.
Exactimo, my friend. Okay, here's that question from Marcia Lomas, and she says, a question about lavender, and as I meant to ask this in the summer, but I have quite a few lavender plants in the garden. When's the best time to harvest the lavender branches, and what's the best way to prune them or trim them during harvesting? She says, I hesitate to cut too much off.
Right, exactly. Now, I'm assuming that Marcia is growing lavender. The species name is angustifolia. So there's different cultivars, but the angustifolias are the hardy ones. They're the ones that are most likely to survive winter here in Ontario. And there's a lot of different lavenders out there, so be aware when you're purchasing that you do purchase a perennial one. And, well, the best time to harvest, of course, is when they are blooming or just beginning to bloom. That's usually about midsummer, when we're doing whatever harvesting we're doing. But it is a good idea to prune. So what I do is I wait till this...
Whoops. Did we lose? I think we've just lost our connection there with Charlie. So we'll wait to have that reconnected momentarily. Before the show, I thought, you know, we might not get a lot of phone calls here. And, of course, we didn't expect to be having Charlie drop off there. But I did a little bit of research on subject matter for today. And I found out that I did something I shouldn't have done. I emptied the fireplace of ashes, took it out to the woods, and just dumped it in the woods. And actually, I find out that fireplace ashes should be saved to use as a fertilizer for your iris and other alkaline soil plants. So if the ground is workable at all, not frozen and not too wet, it would be an excellent time to turn the soil. I'll get into that right now. Certainly in the Stovall area, we got plenty of snow up there. And don't forget about indoor gardening as well. Noted that. We got Charlie back. Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm here.
Okay, good.
Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. The call just dropped.
You just went away. Well,
I didn't really. I was here the whole time. I was talking to myself.
Okay. I think you were dealing with a question there.
Lavender.
Right, you are.
Yeah. So I was just saying that. Make sure if you want perennial lavender, buy Lavender angustifolia. And then, like I said, there's different cultivars from the angustifolias. But what I do in the spring is I wait until the growth starts. So that is not always super early in the spring. Lavender is often a bit slow to wake up. Once the growth starts, you can at that point shear the lavender down, because if you don't, it'll get really kind of rangy, leggy, not a very attractive plant. But if you can give it a bit of a shearing, then it's a good idea. Never cut off more than a third of the plant at any one time. Remember that as lavender gets older and older, it gets very woody down at the base. So it's like real sort of chunky stems. So you're going to, the lowest you would go on a lavender plant is 2 inches above that wood. So spring is the time to do that, or you could do that in the fall if you like, but it is important to do that pruning to keep the plants looking good and nice shape. And when they flower, of course, they're amazing.
Okay. From Etobicoke, Jan is on the line. Good morning, Jan. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a magnolia that didn't flower last year, and it's not a tree, it's a bush. It's got lots of root, trunks on the bottom. Mm. So am I supposed to fertilize it, if and when and what with?
Well, you know what? It's funny, we had a call, I think it was last week or the week before. Oh, it was last week. A woman in Stony Creek was very frustrated because her magnolia hasn't been flowering since she planted it many years ago. So if you looked out at the magnolia right now, would you see flower buds on it right now? They should be on the tips. They're furry. They're large. They're oval-shaped furry flower buds. And
yes,
they should be there now. Do you see those if you look at your magnolia?
Yes. There's lots and lots and lots, like there was last year, lots and lots. But last year, they just didn't open.
Oh, interesting. Well, last year was very cold and very wet. And so it is possible environmentally, the plant still is impacted by temperature and moisture. So we did have it's kind of like this year, such a mild fall. And then once winter hit, it seems to kind of go on forever last spring. So what I would do is keep your fingers crossed that we get a real proper spring, the sun, things start to grow and then it stays warm, because sometimes the flower buds will get frosted off. They'll start to grow. We get nice warm weather, the buds will start to grow, and then all of a sudden a cold night or a big, harsh wind, and then the buds get blasted right off the plant and never open. So assume that that's not going to happen. And once they are flowering, enjoy them. Make sure you don't have a lawn growing up against the magnolia. Make sure it's open, preferably with mulch around the base. And I would be fertilizing right around the flowering time. So right after they flower, with a general all-purpose flowering plant or flowering tree and shrub type fertilizer.
Oh, great. And just a comment, there was a program on the news the other day, and those places where they rescue goats and pigs and donkeys. Mm. They love old Christmas trees. Yes, apparently it keeps them going till spring. They eat the whole thing.
That's great. So I wanted to tell, so when you heard it on the radio, it was somewhere in the area. I wonder, I guess you'd have to bring the trees to wherever these sort of rehabilitation centers are. But good idea. Good idea.
Yeah, just a comment. Okay,
yeah,
thank
I like
you.
It.
Thanks very much, Jen. I appreciate that. Let's see. Oh, on the way from our house, we get to Newmarket by going along Vivian Road. And there's a farm that we pass, just a small little farm, hobby farm. And there's a goat there called Maggie. And it's so funny. This darn goat it jumps up on a little table they got set up there. And often you pass by and you look over, and there's Maggie standing on top of this table, just looking around. Unbelievable. But cute, you know.
Goats.
Yeah. All righty. Well, now, let's see. We've Richmond Hill, your old stomping grounds, Charlie. Judy, maybe a former neighbor of yours is on the line. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Excuse me. I have four inch Christmas cactuses. They're called zygote cactus.
Mm-hmm.
And I had them bought for me after I got out of the hospital a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be all different colors, and I want to put them in one pot.
Mm-hmm. You do that?
They're in regular potting soil right now, and I bought a bag of cactus soil.
Good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So should I break away the old soil that's regular soil when I put them in the pot?
Not necessarily. What I would do is when you take the little root balls out of the small pots, you'll find that probably the soil is holding together in the shape of the pot.
Yes.
If you see a lot of roots, if it's a real bundle of roots, which it probably won't be, but if it is, then I would loosen the soil and loosen the roots. But if you just see the shape of the pot and the roots are within the soil and it's a nice little mass of soil, I wouldn't do a lot of messing around with it. I would plant at the same level, of course, is important. The depth, they need to be planted at the same level or slightly higher than they were, because they will sink down a bit when you do your transplanting and watering. The other thing is I would use a clay pot. So, you know, the clay terracotta pots. Because it will help with no problem. You're less likely to overwater if you use a terracotta pot. So that would be a good choice. Also a shallow pot. Because remember, Christmas cactus do not have they're forest cactuses. They do not have deep roots. So just be careful you don't put them in a big tall pot with inches and inches of soil beneath the roots. Find that they will just come to a standstill and they will not do any growing whatsoever if you do that. They're just, plants get a little bit shocked when they're transplanted, but they get particularly shocked if they get put into a pot that's substantially larger than the one they came out of.
Do you know where I can get a shallow pot right now?
You're in Richmond Hill. I'm just trying to think. Well, I guess it depends on where you are. I mean, the Canadian Tires, the Home Depots, they always have a small plant section. And what you're looking for is, where's the nearest Sheridan's in Unionville still open? You want what's called an azalea pot. So it's a shallower pot than a standard pot. Or a pan, a P-A-N pan, because that way it'll, or you might even find something that's just kind of a really attractive ornamental ceramic low oval or round planting pot. Just make sure whatever you choose has drainage holes.
Okay.
All right. Good luck with that.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
thanks,
Judy.
Thanks for calling.
Have a good weekend, and thank you for tuning our way here on Zoomer Radio. I'm going to take a look at an email that we received, and this is from Aldina. She says, I have this ornamental kale since the fall of 2019 and have kept it growing in the garage in the winter and then back outside in the summer. Right now, it's in the house because it's so cute and I want to enjoy it. It went through the process of going to seed and then having the color on the leaves this past year. I've saved the seeds and want to plant them. Here's a question now. Do these plants survive the winter outdoors, zone 5? And how do I start the new plants with the seeds I've collected? So there you go, Aldina in Cambridge.
Yeah, thank you for your note, Aldina. Aldina's a pretty consistent writer of emails. She asks good questions. All right, so the question about ornamental kale. It's a good question. And actually, it is. She sent some photographs. I don't know if you looked at them, Frank. But,
yeah, they're beautiful. Yeah.
It is pretty cute what she's brought in. So she has saved the seeds. Well, in our world, no. Ornamental kale will not survive the winter. They are hardy, pretty hardy, which is why they stand up outside all winter. But they'll typically collapse in the spring once the thaw begins. The ornamental kale or ornamental cabbage will often just turn to mush. They're considered hardy to about 5 degrees Fahrenheit, which I believe is about minus 15 Celsius. So theoretically, they're hardy. They are biennial, so they grow leaves the first year, and then they grow flowers the second year. And, of course, they love our cool fall temperatures because that's when the color gets most intense. So we're lucky that we do have that nice fall. We get the great fall color, and then they're ornamental all winter in the garden. So what do you do when you want to sow seeds? Well, you've collected seeds or you can buy seeds. Now, there's two ways to do this. One is in the spring, sow the seeds, and they're going to go on the surface of the soil. So whatever you're planting into, whether it's a cell pack or some pots or a flat of some kind, remember, just sow the seeds on the surface because they need light to germinate. So no burying of the seeds. Of course, you're going to want to use a germination mix or a seed starting mix. It's a much finer soil, more finely ground soil than regular potting soil. And then you're going to, keep moist. I typically will just have a cover over top of my flats of seeds. It could be one of the plastic hoods, or it could just be some saran wrap, just to hold in that moisture. And once they grow, then, so what I was going to say is start those seeds in the spring and then grow them on as plants throughout the summer. And then they'll be, full-size plants in time for fall when they really come into their own. Or you can wait and do the math. You sow the seeds 6 to 10 weeks before your projected first frost. So backing it up, if the first frost is in typically late November, then back it up, 6 to 10 weeks from there, and then sow your seeds. Remember, once those little seedlings start to grow, if they're outside, that's fine. But if for whatever reason you've started your seeds inside, like in the spring, or maybe even in the late summer, and you want to get those plants outside, you're going to have to harden them off. You can't just take them outside from the warm house straight outside. And even though they're pretty tough little plants, they have to be hardened off or acclimated to the outdoor temperature. So it's taking them out for, a couple hours every day until they're tough enough to be able to stay out 24 hours a day. And, of course, you want to plant it into your fall and winter planters, or if you're growing enough, then, fill some spots where your annuals were. Just, make a big show of a mass planting of ornamental kale. Super pretty.
Okay. Just a reminder, that was for an email from Aldina, and we always appreciate the emails. It certainly Charlie does. Gives her a chance to do a little bit of research rather than, flying at things off the cuff, as it were. So if you could send an email to Charlie, here it is, jot it down, and then write your question to c.dobbin, that's D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. And the phone numbers for the Garden Show right now in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Anywhere in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. And right now would be an excellent time to call. We've got a couple of lines open here on Zoomer Radio. Charlie and I will return in just moments here to the Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, box, box, hollyhocks, tulips, and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Charlie, I'd just like to take just a moment to give a plug to a show that's going to be on the air tomorrow. My old friend Gene Stevens has a wonderful program called Vintage Favorites, and certainly worth mentioning right now that next week marks the 20th anniversary of the launch of Zoomer Radio on January 8th, as a matter of fact, of 2001, when it was simply called AM 740. And there's a lot of history packed into those 20 years, stories of the men and women who built the station and the stories and the songs of the artists we championed. Gene Stevens will tell you this story because he was there right at the start. Station's program director, I know you remember that. And he was fortunate enough to work with some truly wonderful people then and now. And he's delighted and privileged to welcome our Zoomer Media founder, Moses Neimer, who will add his impressions and recollections during the three to four hour tomorrow. And I hope you'll join him on Vintage Favorites. It starts at 1 o'clock and runs right through till 4:30, including Moses.
That sounds great.
Yeah, that's super, huh?
I'll be listening to that.
Good stuff. Let's see. We've got Cynthia online from Mississauga. Good morning, Cynthia. Hello, Cynthia.
Good morning.
Oh, there you are.
Happy New Year to you, Charlie.
Thank you, Cynthia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I listen to you all the time. I am very glad I got to you today.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm having breakfast, so forgive me. I have some insects. Mm-hmm. I bought a thing in a potted plant, and it's affected. It got into all the soil in all my other plants, mm-hmm. and they bite me. They fell around, mm-hmm. and they bite me. And when they bite me, I'm allergic to their bite. I'm itching all over.
Oh.
Anyway, I want to get rid of them. And how do I go about getting rid of them?
Okay, that's a very unusual question. I've never had that question where something that's on the plants is also affecting you.
Yes,
actually,
you know, they fell around and they bite me, and I'm allergic to whatever they
I'd probably toss the plants rather than, because I have no idea.
You know, I have too many, about 12 plants. I love my plants, and they're all beautiful. So, I had this problem before, and I went to allergist, and he said, I should clone my plants, but then they die, not able to breathe. And I got rid of it, and now they came. It came back. And I'm using something called Safer, S-A-F-E-R, apostrophe S, and it's 3-in-1 garden spray. Yeah. And it doesn't say, it says all kind of different insects it is good for. I've been using it. It says to spray the plants, the top and on the leaf.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that. I did it twice, but I haven't been able to clear them.
See, that's my point. That so often, for starters, is this an insect that flies around?
Yeah, it flies around, yes.
It's a wing. And can you tell me, is it black or white or is it any color?
Very tiny, dark color.
You know what? If you went to one of your plants right now and you, with the palm of your hand, you just gently tap the side of the pot. Mm-hmm. Would, if you're near one of your plants, you could try this. Does a whole little cloud of what looks like fruit flies fly up out of the pot?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so that sounds a lot like something called fungus gnats. It's a very small gnat, G-N-A-T.
Yes.
Not typically something that affects people, but certainly can be a real problem just because they the thing about insects is that they breed so fast. They can lay eggs, faster than we can blink, and those eggs hatch and grow up again almost faster than we can blink. So it's very, very quick and growth to the populations of insects. So I would not try spraying for an insect that is flying, particularly inside your house. You will never win that battle. You'll never actually spray all the insects, and you'll just end up getting insecticide all over your walls and curtains. So what I would do is I would cut way back on the watering of your plants. Just some plants you're going to have to, feel them. Make sure that if they're of the cactus or succulent varieties, let them dry right out. If it's things like poinsettias or, flowering plants, you have to dry them down more than you have been so that they feel quite dry on the surface, and then water sparingly. And do that for the next month or so, and you're going to find the insect population will drop because the fungus will not be as prevalent in the soil if you dry the soil down more than you currently are.
Yeah, okay. And then there is now because it's been carrying water just once per week.
Yeah, don't water on the calendar. Feel the soil before you water. No watering on the calendar, particularly in the winter, because all of our plants are so different when they need water and when they can just be left. They use a lot more water in the spring and summer and fall than they do in the winter. So that's one of the things we tend to do as hobby gardeners is we sort of water consistently year round. But of course, plants aren't growing in these shorter days of December and January, the way they were back in July and August. So keep that in mind. You just, cut back on your watering. And the only thing I would do is, and I've recommended this before, it's a product made by Safers. It's available in any garden center or even at like a Canadian Tire type store would have them. And they're just called sticky sticks. So sticky and then STIX, kind of like the old flypaper, except these are yellow, sticky yellow cards. And follow the instructions, get them out in amongst your plants, and you will trap flying insects. All insects love yellow, and they're very attracted to the yellow, and they fly towards it, they get stuck in the sticky cards, and before you know it, again, you've lowered the population of insects dramatically. And it'll take a few weeks, but if you cut back on watering, get out the sticky sticks, you should be able to eliminate them.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. I hope those helpful words are going to pay off for you. Now, boy, that's weird that those little things are biting her, huh? Never heard that before.
I wonder if there's, I find it, sometimes we have more than one thing going on. And at this time of year, it's so dry, right? The humidity levels are so low. Sometimes this is a time of year where we need to fill the bathtub and put some baby oil into it or some Epsom salt, something that will take some of the dryness and irritation out of our skin. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, she might have that going on separately because typically, like I said, anything that's going to be found in plants inside our homes is not something that's interested in human beings or pets or anything like that. They just like they like something about the plants.
Okay. Call from Cynthia leaves me to say that one line is open here at 416-360-0740 or in the province anywhere. You call 1-866-740-4740. It's a free call to reach Charlie Dobbin here on The Garden Show. We're going to be back to talk to Pete just around the corner here in Toronto next on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, as promised, let's get to Pete, who's waiting on the line there, maybe just around the corner here in Toronto. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call, Frank. And you're right, so right, when you say Gene Stevenson's great show there. Listen to him all the time, and I look forward to his show tomorrow. But I must say, Frank and Charlie, you guys have the best radio garden show on radio. There's no question about that.
Oh, that's true.
I got a quick question regarding my Japanese maple. It's a mature Japanese maple in my front lawn. And I noticed this year, a lot of the foliage is still hanging around the tree. It's lost, I would say, probably about 50% of the leaves have fallen. But I'm just wondering if there's something I should have done or didn't do to the tree in the fall. And I'm just wondering why the leaves are still hanging around.
Good question, actually. No, there's nothing you can do or could have done. It all comes down to the environment. So what should happen in a normal fall, if there's such a thing as normal anymore, what should happen is we get our fall weather, which includes sunny days and then cold nights. So you get that temperature differential, warm still in the daytime. Of course, the soil at that time is still warm. Plants are knowing that winter's coming because the days are getting shorter. And as the nights get cooler, again, plants start to respond. Physiologically, things go on in the plants. And it's actually, some cells actually die between where the leaves are attached to the branches of the tree. So when that layer of cells dies and then we get a windy day, the leaves blow off and they're gone. And that's why we call it fall. But if we don't get those sort of nice warm days and snappy cold nights, then the leaves often don't form what we call that abscission layer. So what we had is we had very, very mild fall. We did get one cold snap, and then it got mild again. And all of that caused many trees to say, okay, hold on, I'm confused. I'm holding on to my leaves. And then, of course, you know, winter came anyway. So the leaves did hold on. They did stay brown, but I would not be overly concerned. What will happen in the spring is the buds will start to break, the new growth will start to emerge, and that will force the old leaves off.
Got it. Okay, so no concerns at all. That is wonderful.
Not at all. And actually, you might remember, Pete, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we had a fall where we never really had any cold snaps at all. Like, we had no fall color that year. And so many trees held onto their leaves that winter. We just kept being mild all fall, and then it was winter overnight. And the plants just helped. Many people were very concerned that their deciduous trees were dead because all the leaves were so dead and still attached. But everything turned out perfectly fine in the spring.
I remember that. That is great. Charlie, thank you so much for the answer. I really appreciate it and love listening to the show. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling, Pete.
Bless your heart. And thanks for those nice words, too. Always nice to receive a little pat in the back, isn't it? On behalf of everybody at the station, thank you. Here's a note from Ann Cavanaugh, email. Says, hello, Charlie. For a gift, I received a waxed amaryllis. I'm sure you've seen them before, but I have not. The part of the bulb, which would be below the soil in a pot, has been sealed in wax. Instructions say place on a tabletop in bright light, but not direct sun. The bulb is blooming beautifully. When the blooming is done, what can I do to reuse the bulb?
Have you seen these at all, Frank?
No.
So you know what an amaryllis bulb looks like. It's a big bulb.
Yeah.
And these are literally dipped in wax. Often it's like a bright red Christmas wax.
Yeah, right.
So, and all the energy for that plant to grow is in the bulb, just waiting to grow. And with a little wax coat on like that, they'll put a little flat bottom on the bottom of the bulb so it stands up nicely. And of course, the reason we keep it out of direct sun is because the wax will melt off the amaryllis. And I'm afraid to say, Anne, that there's a very short answer to her question about what can I do to reuse the bulb. The answer is absolutely nothing. When bulbs are waxed like that, it is what we would call a one-season wonder. That is a bulb that goes into the composter once it's finished blooming. There's no way you can keep that plant going because, of course, it's using all that energy from the bulb and none of that energy is being replaced because you have no soil, no water, you're not doing any inputs into the blooming amaryllis. So the amaryllis is using its energy and then will die.
Aha, good point. A little tip that I picked up, I went online this morning just to, you know, go over some of the things that gardeners should be thinking about at this time of the year. And one little note says actively growing houseplants will benefit from a half-strength shot of liquid houseplant fertilizer. What's your thought on that, Charlie?
Well, the operative word there, Frank, is actively growing. Okay, so many plants are not actively growing at this time of year, and how we can judge whether something's actively growing or not is it flowering? So, for example, you might have African violets right now that are blooming. Definitely half-strength fertilizer. Orchids, same thing. Amaryllis, for sure. Christmas cactus, why not? But generally speaking, no. Most plants are not actively growing. So do not start to fertilize them until we get into much longer days, preferably late March.
Right. One of the other little tips that I picked up was certainly this time of year, folks don't think of getting out into the garden, but it's a great time to spend some time on those garden tools, readying them up for spring, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's something to keep yourself a little bit busy. And when you can't get out there and do some gardening, you can certainly get yourself organized. One thing that many people do right now is they'll order, though they're not printed as much as they used to be, seed catalogs.
Uh-huh.
Or go on the web, and you can just start to salivate at some of the great choices of plants that are, of seeds that are out there. It is the time now to be ordering your seeds. Remember last year when the pandemic hit, suddenly everybody was a gardener and you couldn't buy a tomato plant for love nor money. So get your seeds on order and in your home so that you've got them ready to go when, not that we're planting tomato seeds now, we wait till March, but certainly you can start looking at what's out there consider looking up a CD Saturday or CD Sunday in your neighborhood. You may find there's an exchange going on and people are seed swapping. Now, it might not be in person. It might be more of a you drop it at my front door and I'll drop yours at your front door kind of thing. But either way, consider ways to get a hold of the seeds now and start planning for that spring and summer that's coming very, very soon.
Okay. And Charlie, we are fresh out of time. In fact, we're over time a little
bit. Oh, my goodness. So
yeah,
we are.
How about that? All right. Thank you so much for, once again, a great show, Charlie.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank. And thank you, Carlos. Thanks to our great callers. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.